Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
It's the Album Nerds Podcast.
It's good.
I'm Dude. I got Andy and Don with me. We're going to have a inspiring conversation today. You guys ready?
Yeah. I got a little purple perspiration dripping down my neck as we speak here.
I think you need to see a doctor. Don, any purple fluids coming out of your body? Or are you good?
No, hold on. I've been online shopping for a red Corvette.
just a little one. Yeah.
You got to slow down though. And just saying. All right. So this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, and we like to talk about them quite a bit. We have hundreds of episodes to prove it. We have a great show for you today. We are going to be each talking about an album that we believe was inspirational to the creative process of Prince, the purple one, as sometimes people call him, which I'm sure he hated. Don's going to ask us a deep question. We're going to have some shout outs to albums and album related items we're digging. And then we're going to spin that wheel of musical discovery to find out what we're going to talk about next time. But this week, it's all about Prince-pirations.
That's what I'm talking about!
Well, Prince, a revolutionary figure. Get it? Revolutionary?
Yeah. Yes. I'll make a similar joke later in my presentation.
So a revolutionary figure in the music world drew inspiration from a wide array of genres and artists, which helped shape his distinctive sound. His work reflects a fusion of funk, rock, soul, and pop, characterized by innovative rhythms and bold experimentation. This eclectic mix not only defined his unique musical identity, but also pushed the boundaries of contemporary music, leaving a lasting impact on the industry. Today, each of us will present an album by an artist believed to have influenced Prince.
Now, there's blogs and things regarding this, but Prince himself didn't speak too much about other artists or inspirations. He liked to talk about his own music. Some of it is what we found, and others just things by ear, you know? So it was an interesting week of exploration. Along that journey, what other albums did you check out before you made your final decision?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of potential connections to Prince here. One that I kind of found in like an offhand interview he had given at one point where he mentioned his first band before he actually became Prince was tentatively titled Phoenix after the Grand Funk Railroad album from 1972.
Wow.
So I started there. Kind of an interesting record. The title track, which I guess Prince was particularly fond of, which is called Flight of the Phoenix. Pretty awesome cut. Like a 10-minute jam, kind of a funky jam. The rest of the album has some questionable lyrical content, I would say. And
okay.
Dug into it more. But Funk Railroad's got some pretty interesting stuff there from like the early 70s, late 60s, if you're not familiar.
Cool. Don, what'd you find?
Well, because of the funk, and I think James Brown is a pretty obvious mm-hmm. choice. So looking at Sex Machine from 1970, actually a double album, kind of a lot of live performances on it. But, you know, I think it influenced, you know, Prince's funkiness and his energetic stage presence. Yeah.
His
dance moves.
Well, another influence I read about was Chaka Khan and Rufus, and the album I listened to was Rufus featuring Chaka Khan.
Listen to this dude, Rufus. He knows what he's talking about.
very creative title.
Yes.
That sound and listening to that record totally heard the early Prince albums, the ones from the late 70s. A lot of sonic similarities, and which was really cool to kind of hear that. And then years later for him to have written the song I Feel For You, which Chaka Khan recorded on one of her solo projects and became a big hit in the 80s around the time that he was blowing up. I Feel For You with a U, of course. That's how you know Prince wrote it. But yeah, I loved that story of him getting influenced by their work, then him becoming a part of. Yeah, yeah. No, that's awesome. Very cool.
Did she have an album called Wrath of Khan?
She should have, really. I mean,
I don't think that was really the demographic she was performing
for. The Venn diagram of pop fans and Star Trek fans.
Well, why don't we jump into our actual choices?
You choose me?
All right, for my Prince-piration selection, we're talking about a band often tied to the purple one. Funkadelic.
Sounds like you're talking about a penis.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Penis? Something like a preserve blood flow there, man.
Never never tie anything to the purple one.
Okay. He was called the purple one. I didn't make that up.
I know, but there's euphemisms as well. Proceed.
We're talking about their 1971 album, Maggot Brain. It's the third studio album for the George Clinton-led Funk Collective from New Jersey. I didn't realize they were from New Jersey. It doesn't sound quite as sexy when you say they're from New Jersey, but the record was kind of the final installment for the original lineup of the group. Called a bit of shake-up after this album was released, but why don't we jump in here and play the title cuts? This is a little bit of the 10-minute opus, Maggot Brain. All right, that is Eddie Hazel on guitar there. Essentially about a 10-minute guitar solo to open the record there, but incredibly emotive song. Really stands out. Clinton reportedly told him to play as if he had just learned his mother had died.
Jeez.
Pretty interesting prompt there for Mr. Hazel. Apparently he was on a lot of LSD at the time as well. Probably not a great mindset to think about your mother dying, but hey, got a great result. And man, that cut, I mean, for me, that's kind of just, it's almost hard to come back from that cut, having it as the opener. It's so epic and awesome and just so emotional. It's like, okay, now I got a whole rest of the record to get into, which is totally a little different vibe.
I would just say that I had a brainstorm listening. I've listened to Funkadelic many times over the years. I finally understood that it's a mix of funk and psychedelic. finally dawned on me, especially while listening to that song over and over again. I was like, oh, duh.
So, psychedelic. Congratulations. Funky psychedelic. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All right. My clickbait headline for Maggot Brain is, rise above your own shit and get down with what the P-Funk are peeing on. I found this great quote from Mr. Clinton when he was collaborating with Prince on a record. He said something along the lines of, I got a track I peed on and I'm going to send it to you. You pee on it and send it on back. So, it's like putting your stank on it, I assume. You know, funky stank. Yeah.
Definitely a way with words. Now, Prince certainly inspired by George Clinton and his various works, and Eddie Hazel too, that guitar sound. There's a lot of that I hear in Prince's solos. But in terms of the overall sometimes silliness that George Clinton's music goes into, you don't hear so much of that in Prince's music. Mm. It happens, but...
Yeah, but some of the crassness, I think.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, the sexuality and the crassness, I think, is definitely there in Prince's music. Yeah, for me, it was largely that guitar sound. The Eddie Hazel guitar sound, I think, is something that does pop up in his live shows, especially. For me, it's largely split up into three main chunks. I got the Maggot Brain intro. There's a collection of like five more kind of like more rock orientated funk tracks in the middle of the record there, which are a little bit shorter and to the point, but they're super tight and interesting and got that quirky P-Funk sensibility to them. And you have the big closer there, Wars of Armageddon, which is just like this epic psychedelic sort of drum trip, I would say, with all cool kinds of percussions and stuff. But it plays really well. It's an interesting ride, and it's only about a half hour, but man, it's pretty engaging. Why don't we play one of those shorter cuts from the middle of the record? This is called Super Stupid.
So Super Stupid, of course, features lead guitarist Eddie Hazel. Kind of Hendrix-ish, I think, is his guitar. So, yeah, just a heavy guitar-driven rock song, but still has that fusion of funk and hard rock elements, which sounds a bit like Prince. Yeah, he did that a lot, you know?
That's a thing he did, yeah.
So the song actually tells the story of a foolish drug user, which might have been Hazel. He mistakenly snorts heroin thinking it's cocaine. It's like Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction. The lyric is super stupid, bought a nickel bag, thought it was coke, but it was skag. So, you know, like most of the album, you know, that track is intense and raw, like the purple one. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
This is going to be a thing.
My clickbait headline for Maggot Brain is, "Make Don's funk the P-funk. He wants to get funked up. Prince will have what he is having."
I'll have what she's having.
Nice. Anyway, hadn't thought about it before, but listening to this, you know, I mean, you can definitely hear the, you know, how they influence Prince, right? And again, it's that blend of funk rock and soul and psychedelia, and that's what Prince do. I think the funk highlights on the album are probably the Hit It and Quit It and You and Your Folks, Me and My Folks. There's a lot of cool interplay. The keyboardist is Bernie Worrell. There's a lot of kind of the keyboard interacting with the guitar, which is, you know, really cool. Somehow the production it's kind of polished, but also raw. So you can hear the instruments. So it's clear in that way, but it's still gritty, you know, kind of like that Sex Pistols record. It's like the 10th time I've mentioned that.
No, just like a nice balance between like having that energy, that raw energy, and that sort of professionalism. There's also just like a lot going on sonically too on some of these tracks, just the background noise, or like even on Maggot Brain, there's like tons of distortion and like effects come in and out, and there's some studio wizardry going on there. Produced by Clinton, of course.
Sure.
Okay, why don't we play that track that Don mentioned there? This is the third cut from the album, Hit It and Quit It.
I think we're finding that we're mostly interested in the guitar work on this record, because that's what really grabs my attention, even more than the funky bass and the interesting vocal approaches. I think because it does remind me of Prince and how his voice sometimes would come through his guitar, and I feel like that's what was happening there. Hit It and Quit It can be seen as a product of its time, reflecting the shifting attitudes towards sexuality and relationships. Or it's just about one night stands.
That was about baseball. No?
I think baseball song? Maybe, yeah. I think we could say the same about Prince's more sexual songs, where you can look at them on the surface or you can look beneath the surface for more context of what it's about. So
there was an outtake called Toot It and Boot It.
I hope you didn't have that like planned. No.
It's top of the dome for Don.
Boot it and boot it.
Freestyling.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. My clickbait headline to describe the album, a funkadelic odyssey you can't just hit and quit. Dive into this dark, intense journey that redefines rock and funk. Nice. At the time, I've read that this album was not praised. But kind of a one-off, oh, you know, that's cute, you know. But I think that there, over the years, definitely has inspired many artists beyond Prince, has been sampled in hip-hop songs and definitely influential, and a really nice 36-minute exploration of a different side of funk. So very cool, fun record to listen to.
Yeah, I think exploration is a great word to sum this one up. Yeah, just a couple more Prince Funkadelic tie-ins here. In 97, Prince inducted P-Funk into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Gave him a nice little speech there. They, of course, collaborated on Prince's Weekend Funk on the album Graffiti Bridge, which was in like the mid-80s. Yeah, so I mean, this is a highly acclaimed album, you know, in hindsight here. For me, man, it holds up awesome. I love listening to this record. And when I saw the Prince connections, I was like, hell yeah, we're going to talk about Maggot Brain. So I'm going to nominate this for the Album Nerds Hall of Fame. But this record on its own, I think, is pretty inventive and, you know, probably inspirational to a lot of artists outside of Prince as well. Really kind of pushing the boundaries of what funk music could be and kind of into that psychedelic sound. The record itself covers like drug use and economic equality and pollution and bigger cultural issues. So what do you guys think? Hall of Fame material for Maggot Brain?
Yeah, you know, I didn't initially, you know, it didn't occur to me that it would be a Hall of Famer, but maybe it is, right? It's even got kind of a Beatles-y track, right? Like the Wars of Armageddon is kind of like Revolution number 9. You know, sort of that
boy
noisy
Beatle reference again.
I mean, it is in some regards, yeah, similar.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I feel like it's a foundational piece, like a brick in the wall, as said so brilliantly by Pink Floyd.
Nice.
Yeah, that sounds like he's on the fence. I don't know.
Does this mean I'm Team Funkadelic and not Team Parliament if I go with it?
We don't have to pick sides.
I think you can be on both. Teams.
For both. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna vote yes. If only because Prince would.
Okay, Prince would want me to. Okay, dude.
Yes, I mean the statements I made at the end of my spiel, I think sum up that I think that I believe that this is a cornerstone record that helped set the tone for a lot of what was to come, and is still, besides being influential, is 100% listenable. Mm-hmm. And that's something
that,
to
that it is. Oh, some faint praise there. But welcome to the Album Nerds Hall of Fame, Funkadelic Maggot Brain.
Before we continue to be Prince-fired, while we hear some words from the Six Picks Music Club.
Hey there, I'm Dave, and I host Six Picks Music Club with my two buddies, Jeff Rowe and Russ. We talk about six songs on a playlist that meet a theme to a topic that we've already decided on.
Just real quick, do you meet themes? Do you meet them?
Okay, no, I don't know. I guess that, what's the...
Russ, could I get a ruling on the verbal phrase, meet the theme?
Jeff, I don't know. I'm not fluent in the spoken word.
People just don't say meet the theme. They say fit a theme. And every week we talk about six songs that fit a theme.
All right. Okay, fit a theme.
Guys, we're going to have to re-record this.
Ah, my...
Okay, and Dave, don't forget, it's Six Picks Music Club, not your dark web pod, Sex Picks Booty Grub.
Easily confused. Well, that was...
Yes. It also sounds like something Don would say.
True.
So go check out the Six Picks Music Club. They sound like a delightful bunch of fellas.
All right. Well, my Prince-pirational album goes back to 1971. It's Joni Mitchell's Blue. This is the fourth studio album by the Canadian singer-songwriter born in Fort McLeod, Alberta in 1943. This was written and self-produced after a breakup with Graham Nash and during an intense relationship with James Taylor. Let's start things off with the track River.
So long I would teach my feet to fly.
Yep. Did you guys find yourselves sipping tea and looking wistfully out the window while you're listening to this album? Because I certainly did.
I'm always doing that, but
yeah, that's true.
You guys should hear me try to hit that note in the car.
Oh, please. Please, no.
You'll break your microphone.
River was written on piano. It's about the recent breakup of a romantic relationship, the singer longing to escape her painful emotional bonds, likely inspired by her relationship with Graham Nash. And, you know, although the songs... like set at Christmas time, and she mentions Christmas, but you know, I mean, it's barely a Christmas song, but I feel like in recent years it's become one.
Yeah,
right.
I think so too. Oh, well, it sounds like Jingle Bells, right?
I mean, right. Yeah, she deliberately is incorporating Jingle Bells into it.
It's kind of like Die Hard, which is a Christmas movie because it features Christmas in it.
Yes,
right, right.
Yeah, just a great song, and her voice sounds amazing in it, and just sad, and I just really feel her desperation, I guess. It's actually her second most covered song, the most covered song being Both Sides Now, which we actually talked about with the Judy Collins record.
Oh, right,
I think
right.
She has the most famous version of it, probably. So my clickbait headline for Joni Mitchell Blue is Prince declares Joni Mitchell is a genius. The way she tells a story paints a picture with just a few chords. She puts so much in there. So that's actually a quote from Prince from Entertainment Weekly in 2015. So, I mean, I think there's probably maybe three ways that she may have inspired Prince. I mean, one, I think is the songwriting.
Yeah.
I think just because, Prince is such a great musician that maybe sometimes we don't notice how interesting the lyrics are and how personal they can be.
And letting it all go, laying it all out
putting
there,
all
which
out
is,
there.
Which is something in his regular life, kind of a shy guy, but in his music, he was able to just open the gates. And it feels to me like her music helped inspire him to do it, to let it go.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, perhaps her, you know, her, you know, unique way of playing the guitar and some of the tunings and stuff may have influenced him. Also her voice, which we'll probably talk about. So, I mean, I think this is considered a folk record, but my understanding is that it kind of expanded what folk meant, you know, particularly, you know, lyrically. You know, she's, you know, covering probably complex topics, more personal topics. You know, I think, you know, sonically, she's expanding folk. Anyway, let's hear some more. This is a song called A Case of You.
So A Case of You explores themes of love, longing, heartbreak, and, you know, the emotions of a complicated relationship. But that reference to a case of you, like, and still be able to stand, you know, because I've listened to this album a couple times offhand, but never deeply. And I always kind of thought A Case of You was like the Curious Case of Benjamin Button or something.
Right, right, yeah.
But it's really like a case of beer or whatever, where I overindulge, you know, on you. I just thought that's really, digging into it made it very interesting. And Prince has covered that many times over the years and removed some lines and added some things and stuff. But I think that's a nice tie-in. And it's a song that you can just keep digging deeper and deeper into.
You made it a pallet of you, or a barrel.
A keg.
A keg, yeah.
All right, my clickbait headline to describe the album. Blue, the album so rich you'll want a whole case of it. Joni Mitchell's masterpiece in color and sound. That was a little quote from Prince talking about the color and sound of her music and how it inspired him. So, yeah. I think that's a perfect example of when you can peel back layers in a song like that, and then you are a musician yourself. I could see how it would really inspire you to say, I can go deeper. You know, I wrote this song. I can do more with this. And I think that's, I picture that being what was happening with him.
All right, well, let's hear another one. This is Carrie.
Scrambling down in the street. Now they got me used to that clean white linen and that fancy French cologne.
I love this song, but I had no idea what it was about. I look it up. Apparently, Mitchell took a trip to Crete to a hippie cave dwelling community where she met this man named Carrie.
Oh, sure.
You know, as one does.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to a lot of cave dwelling communities, but I've never really met anyone that inspired a song.
Well, you had never met Carrie, apparently.
Yeah, apparently not.
My clickbait headline for Joni Mitchell's Blue is, oh yeah, that's why Joni Mitchell is great.
Mm-hmm.
This is a nice reminder for me. Like, yeah, this is why we still talk about her. I had this album back in college. Someone, you know, given it to me, or was like, this needs to be part of your collection if you're going to be a serious music fan. Yeah, it's one of those albums that takes a long time to sink in. Like, I really didn't get it the first probably 10 listens, really. And even now, listening to it a lot, I'm getting a lot more out of it after every listen. It's really an incredible record. What she's able to do with her voice, the melody she creates with her voice is just, I can't think of anyone else who really does it as well as she does. She takes like kind of like uneven phrasing and makes it sound catchy and inviting and just interesting to listen to.
It's goofy, but it works.
It totally works.
It's because she's being genuine and it comes through, you know, her personality comes through being herself. And that clip we played where she goes up to that thing, like so up and down so effortlessly. Again, I hear that in Prince.
Me too. I never really thought about that before, but he does do that a lot, and especially in his 80s output. I think this is like an all-time classic. I really enjoy it. She has a lot of great records from this period that I think, you know, any of them probably could have inspired Prince, but this one is among the best for sure.
Well, speaking of all-time classic, I am going to nominate this for the Album Nerds Hall of Fame. Well, again, you know, Prince likes it, and that's good enough for me. So what do you guys think?
I think I'm going to say yes to this album being in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. As Andy and I both kind of alluded to, the more you dig in, the more layers you get to, the more there is to it. And people who have talked about it for years, but it's a real thing, folks. Like, it really is what they say. So go listen to it. And
multiple times.
Yes. Start digging into those layers.
Andy?
Yeah. I think this is a slam dunk. Glad we finally could get it on the show and pay it the homage it so rightly deserves.
All right. Well, congratulations to Joni Mitchell.
Yeah. Thank you to Prince. He got us here.
So Prince seemed to be deeply inspired by Joni Mitchell. You can be too. So check out Joni Mitchell's Blue from 1971.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Well, just like Prince and Joni Mitchell, we're going to go deep. Here's a deep question. What is your favorite Prince moment?
I mean, there's a lot to pick from here, but I'll share a kind of an interesting story that a friend of a friend of mine likes to tell when he's had a couple drinks. He worked in a precious stone store in New York City in the late 80s and early 90s. It sells like gems and like different fancy colorful rocks.
Gotcha.
Anyway, one day, two bodyguards came into the store, cleared out the whole store, and then Prince walks into the store, stands in the back corner of the store away from the desk, whispers to the bodyguard what he wants from the display case. Apparently, the bodyguard communicates with the store owner. He gets out a couple of things that he wanted from behind the shelf, and then he ends up just buying the entire case of all these precious gems. It was like a few $1,000s, I guess. And then they calmly filed back out, but he never really spoke a word out loud. He just kind of did everything, kind of his bodyguard interpreter there, essentially. But
so weird.
Just a little brush with fame there in the early 90s. How about you, dude? Got any good Prince memories?
Several things come to mind, of course, but one, I forget what award show it was, but he was playing on some award show and he had this lacy body outfit thing on. And when he turned around, his butt cheeks were cut up. We're cut out from the pants. I was like, this guy just does whatever the hell he feels like. But I think the most memorable thing is when he changed his name to the unpronounceable symbol to try and free himself from the record contracts he was on.
Yeah.
But Prince is his actual given birth name, so he had to go back. I'm glad he did. I mean, you can't let, you're really letting Warner Brothers win if you give up your actual name. So... that was a confusing time, the artist formerly known as Prince and all of that. So that was kind of a distraction to the music. Good music was coming out during that time, but all anyone could talk about was the goofy name thing. So, but again, he went with his gut at any given moment and committed. So, yeah. And his butt cheeks. I'll give him that.
Yeah, I think, mine also involves him kind of antagonizing Warner Brothers. So in 1985, when Around the World in a Day was going to come out, I mean, this is like the peak of, Prince just became like a superstar, right? Because of Purple Rain, such a huge album. And rather than, really capitalizing on that, he insists that Warner Brothers not release a single or a video before the release of the album. So the album just sort of like accidentally gets released, people didn't realize it until all of a sudden it showed up in stores, which is, I mean, it's not quite commercial suicide, but
it's close.
I can imagine some record people not being thrilled about that. He did finally release singles about a month later. Raspberry Beret came out and had a really cool video. But yeah,
dude, kept it real, man. Can't say he didn't.
All right. Well, what's your favorite Prince moment? Let us know on Instagram and Facebook, or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
Okay. So I'm going to go with a Prince-spiration, then it's a guitar-spiration. It's Santana with their 1971 third album that reached number one on the Billboard 200 chart and helped solidify Santana's position as a groundbreaking force in rock. It was the last feature of the original Santana lineup, but did include guitarist Neil Schon, who at age 17 added a fiery energy, and he went on a couple years later to leave and form Journey.
Oh.
Where he is still rocking the stages with Journey, which is pretty impressive. So the use of congas, timbales, bongos gives this album a unique rhythm-rich sound, which I think was inspiring to Prince and his future sound. So why don't we get into a little bit of the opening track, Batuka. Now, if you've ever watched the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I think the theme song is very similar.
I could see the connection.
Yeah. And this was inspired by the Batuka Joe comics.
God, man.
It's full of them today.
This is a rough week.
Terrible.
Yikes. Okay. This song serves a blistering opener for the album, seamlessly transitioning to the second track, No One to Depend on. I love when when that happens. This album just sounds jammy all the way through. The rock jams, the Latin infusion, the guitar style, how it's so expressive, how Santana's guitar is so expressive are the things that remind me of Prince. And Prince also in live concerts would do a medley of Santana songs, several of them from this particular album, which I think is awesome as well. You can find it on YouTube from a live performance, but it's not great quality, but it's still fun to check out. My clickbait headline to describe this album: Carlos Santana's legendary guitar sound blending infectious Latin rhythms with rock and inspiring a young Prince who went on to start his own musical revolution. See, I did it too, Don.
Yeah, he kind of created a new power generation.
That's right. That's right. That's another Prince backing band, folks. All right, moving on. Let's get into a little bit of everybody's everything. I hear a little James Brown in there.
Yeah?
Yeah, do it. Yeah, totally. That track has a great live feel to it. The whole record, as Dude alluded to, kind of does have like a jam quality to it. My clickbait headline for Santana 3 is Carlos and crew skip the sequel, but I have plenty to say on their dark and groovy third record. Yeah, this is like a really heady, groovy album, I think, from kind of like their what I would consider like their classic period, I guess.
Yeah.
I think what stands out to me, I mean, obviously Carlos's guitar playing is what you show up for, but the percussion, the rhythm section,
yeah,
is really awesome, man. It's so rich and layered, and there's so many interesting things going on driving the songs along. It's really engaging to hear that. Kind of serves as a nice bedrock for the album. Yeah, I mean, really the only song I didn't love was the second to last cut, Everything's Coming Our Way. It's a little bit of a outlier, I guess, in terms of sound, but the rest of the album just almost like being at a Santana concert, which is a pretty good thing. But seriously, Santana 2, what happened to that? Where is that?
It's called Abraxas. Maybe Santana 3 had more of the vibe or feel of the first Santana, self-titled, and maybe that's why they went with it. Why don't we keep moving and check out a little bit of No One to Depend On.
So No One to Depend On is written by Mike Carabello, Coke Escovedo, and Greg Rolli. I mean, all the songs are, you know, I mean, there's obviously some Latin flavor to all of them. This one really drips of it. So basically Latin rhythms and rock guitar supplied by both Santana and Neil Schon. Kind of a call and response thing going on between the guitar and bass on that, which is pretty cool. Apparently the main melody is taken from a song called Spanish Grease, which is recorded by somebody named Willie Bobo in 1965.
You're the one that I want. Oh, not that grease.
Well, my clickbait headline for Santana 3 is Hendrix is just all right with Prince. Santana is his Dios de la Guitarra, which means his guitar god.
There you go.
I'm learning Spanish.
Nicely done.
Guitarra. So yeah, as you know, we already said this, you know, album just it's a cool blend of rock, Latin, and jazz even.
Mm-hmm.
I sounded like Christopher Walken. Jazz even. Jazz even. So yeah, and I mean, there really is that improvisational spirit to it. Sometimes I think that's a problem with improvisational bands, like your jam bands. It doesn't always work on record, or it doesn't really catch the magic. And I think they do a pretty good job of that here, particularly with Batuka and Jungle Strut.
Yeah, I mean, I actually enjoyed the instrumentals as much as the songs with vocal.
Yeah, no, me too, actually.
There's so much going on there. And again, for the Prince item of it, I think he dipped into that. I mean, obviously, they were more cut as pop songs, right? Not lengthy jams, but in live, I think that those elements came out more, and the inspiration from this sound. There's just so much in it. There's so many spices and ingredients in this Santana music that I hadn't really dug into before. I've listened to Santana records, but I've never really allowed myself to listen for the details, and it's just all details. And Prince was like that too.
Yeah, there's even like a maybe an underrated sort of intellectual element to it or something. Like the one song, the Toussaint L'Ouverture or whatever, is that's named after the leader of a Haitian revolution. You know, so yeah. I mean, that's something I, you know, had to look up. You know, so it's not just Pet Shop Boys and Morrissey that, you know, make me you know, learn. It's Santana.
Yeah, a little Spanish and some history. Yeah. It's great.
Speaking of history, one interesting little factoid I found was that Prince discovered Santana while listening to KQRS, a radio station in Minnesota. Think people are still inspired by music they hear on the radio?
I hope so. Or at least on this podcast.
Yes. So discovered it there and then just went and explored. So yes, this podcast is the new way of discovering what you should listen to next.
Yeah. If you want to become the next Prince, keep it tuned.
That's
here.
Right.
We're the new power generation.
not again. My God. All right. So I just want to throw a couple more album highlights in before we go. There's Taboo, which is kind of like a soulful song. It's an exploration of love and desire. And Santana's guitar adds a lot of depth to the song's tension and kind of mysterious sound. Jungle Strut, I think we mentioned. It's an instrumental, but it's so infectious and full of energy and untamed guitar. And Everything's Coming Our Way is just really a bright, uplifting track that is full of optimism, and it sort of synthesizes hope and anticipation of like good things to come. That sums up sort of the spirit of most of this record. So absolutely worth checking out Santana 3 if you haven't heard it before. Don't forget, of course, to listen for those Prince-pirations throughout. But Santana 3 is just full of incredible sounds, and it's fun. And you should go listen to it immediately.
Imagine that.
Immediatamente.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right. Well, we've been digging into the background of Prince. Have you been digging anything else?
Yeah. Have you been digging anything?
It sounds so confrontational. I got a couple things here in my little purple bag, sparkly purple bag. Of course. All right, first one for me is from a group called Better Lovers, an album called Highly Irresponsible. They're a hardcore punk outfit from Buffalo, New York. It's their second album. Let's play A White Horse Covered in Blood.
Sounds more 90s alt punk.
Yeah.
They've been hanging with the Goo Goo Dolls in Buffalo.
Possibly. Some former members of Dillinger Escape Plan in that group, as well as some other punk rock groups of the 2000s. Pretty enjoyable. I was not aware of their existence, so this was a pleasant surprise. And the other one I'll mention is a band we have talked about on the show, but not in quite some time, Goat. The experimental psychedelic rock group from Sweden. They have a self-titled album out. It's their sixth studio album. Let's play Goat Brain.
Yeah, that is not what you expect. Plus, it sounds like Santana.
I was going to say, there's definitely some Santana there.
That's always, with all of Andy's picks, it's never what I expect.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be like, you know, murder engorgement. It's like, la-dee-doo-dee-doo-doo.
I should have picked a different song if I don't. Match the albums and see if you guys can tell. What you been digging on, Don?
Well, I did mention the Pixies album several months ago, but the album did finally come out. It's called The Night the Zombies Came, and here's the opening cut, Primrose.
A little more subdued than I expected.
Yeah, although, I mean, like all their albums, it's this, and then there's some screaming and more, you know, harder and punkier. Yeah. So, yeah, the Pixies are, this is their ninth album by the band formed in Boston in 1986. It features new bassist Emma Richardson, who just replaced Paz Lenchington, who, of course, replaced Kim Deal. And I'm digging songs from her album, which is coming out November 22nd, called Nobody Loves You More. This is actually her first solo album. She's been doing work with the Breeders ever since the Pixies split up. She was also in a group called The Amps. But here's a song called A Good Time Pushed.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds interesting. I mostly have to congratulate you on your transition, though, Don. That was very nice.
That was by far the smoothest transition anyone has ever achieved in the digging segment. Congratulations.
Right. Award winning.
What are you digging, dude?
So I'm digging Geese, which is a band that was formed a few years back. And this is their live EP called Geese, Alive and in Person. Why don't we check out a little bit of 2122 or 2122, I'm not sure.
God of the sun, I'm taking you down on the inside.
Interesting.
Brooklyn-based band, some post-punk influences like The Strokes, Television, and Parquet Courts. I highly recommend checking this out. Their live renditions are really cool. And the 2023 album 3D Country is really awesome. And so throw that one in.
I wonder if they're in like a V formation on stage.
Perhaps. You never know.
Hopefully no one's trying to eat them.
All right, so for the vinyl collection, I recently picked up Zach Bryan's debut album, Deanne, back when he was kind of on his own. Him and his buddies recorded this in a Airbnb before record labels gave a shit. So
before he sold out.
That's right. Let's just listen to a little bit of Sweet Deanne, the title track.
World's not meant for showing mercy.
So he got to continue to be him because his newer albums don't sound too different from this, which I think is awesome. So
it's a good one.
Go start at the beginning with Deanne.
So what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
It's about that time on the show, and I'm reminded of something that the Great Purple One himself had said in the past, which I thought was pretty interesting. Prince said, "Cool means being able to hang with yourself. All you have to ask yourself is there anybody there I'm afraid of? Is there anybody who, if walked into a room and I saw, I get nervous? If not, then you're cool." With that in mind, let's bring up my friend and yours, Wadbot, to see what we'll be talking about on next week's episode.
Next time, you all have to ask yourselves a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you punk? You will be exploring classic punk rock albums. Enjoy the anarchy.
Oi, oi, oi. Some classic punk rock. That's a that's quite a shift.
Yes. That'll sound a little different.
Yeah, go from Joni Mitchell to classic punk.
So this is like Blink 182.
Yes, the classics.
Yeah, so I assume we'll be talking more late 70s, early 80s. Yep. All right, cool. Sounds good.
Well, what's your favorite classic punk rock record? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. And please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Album Nerds Podcast. We'll catch you next time, you dirty punk.
Thanks for listening, everybody. See you then.
Don't have to be rich to be my girl. You don't have to be cool to rule my world.
I'll stop.
Yeah, before the ain't no particular time, that's very wise. We'll just end on it.
Kiss.